Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. Lights, camera, action! Huzzah Goes Hollywood May 17th to the 19th, 2024 at the Doubletree in Portland, Maine. Become a gladiator, defend the Little Round Top, explore dwarven mines, or command a mighty starship. Your fun is only limited by your imagination. Get tickets at huzzahcon.com. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by Boston Brick Co. Boston Brick provides LEGO enthusiasts in Greater Boston with a vast selection of used and new LEGO sets, minifigs, Pick-A-Brick, and Build-A-Fig. Boston Brick buys used LEGO too. Visit www.bosbrick.com or call 781-627-7700. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. You are listening to episode 301, recorded live from TotalCon 2024. And joining me today is a very special friend. He's an industry guest, game designer, and just all-around amazing person. Referred to the one and only Mr. Jay Parker. Jay, how are you today?
Good. How are you, Jonathan?
I'm doing okay. I am really excited for today because this is the first time we've talked in person about a game you've designed.
Yes.
We've talked like online and just kind of casually, you know, not on the podcast or whatever. But this is your baby.
Yeah, I mean, you interviewed the publisher earlier on.
And Oz was on, yeah. Yep. That was episode 291 for anyone who wants to listen. We talked about Katana Ra and AI art. That was an interesting discussion to have. So you can get to that wargamerecon.com/WR291. We'll get you to that. And he talked about like the story, the setting, the idea of art, and why he wanted to use AI art and included it, and all of the pushback that he got on that. And for today, because you are the game design guy, let's talk game mechanics.
Yes.
And just kind of briefly, for the game mechanics for this game, what sets this apart from any other cyberpunk game out there? Because that's all that's out there.
Oh, yeah.
But for Katana Ra, something about it makes it unique and makes it special.
So what I did was, because I worked on Cyberpunk V3 and Cyberpunk Red. And so when you kind of listen to like what the fans talk about, like what they like and don't like about a game.
Mm-hmm.
I took all the complaints, and I had been keeping a list anyways, because it's like when you're working on a product, you don't want to, especially for another publisher, you don't want it to be bad.
No, of course not.
And when I started putting the mechanics together, I was doing research. I was immersed in Japanese movies, and not just samurai films. I was watching dramas, comedies.
Yep.
Some really dark shit because, oops, sorry, I don't know if I can swear on your show.
You can work family friendly, but that'll get edited out.
But it was just dark content. And what I found was I wanted to be able to do all of it. Not just like, oh, look, it's a samurai game. Every freaking violent game out there, these cyberpunk games, all the same rehashed stuff over and over and over.
Yep.
But it's like, oh, it's D20. Oh, it's, I like the Interlock system. I thought was great for Cyberpunk 2020, except for the hacking rules, which everybody agrees with. So when I put the mechanics together, it's like, it has to be able to do this, 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 and this, and still be able to maintain the cultural feel of Japan.
Yep.
And so that's what we did. And so this game stands out because you can play the samurai the way the samurai plays in a film without actually turning it into a power, like an unbalanced character.
Okay.
And so we also have, there's other classes within the game you can play and stuff, but it's not D20 based. It's D10 based. It kind of looks like the love child of West End Games Star Wars system. And
that's digging back.
Yeah, and aspects of Fusion and Interlock from Artal.
Okay.
But it's better. And it's self-serving to say that, but it's just, it actually plays better. And we've done we've done play tests, and it ran smooth. You can play it cyberpunk style. You could play it, the whole feel of Japanese
mysticism style.
You could play all hackers or whatever. I mean, the game allows for, without it, all the different varieties of gameplay in a cyberpunk setting without it being unbalanced.
Okay.
And the only thing we had in there that wasn't balanced at first, and I actually, in the world book, we talk about it, which is I'm currently working on, the samurais come with full suit of armor.
Oh, wow.
Which they're supposed to. I mean, they're if they're working for the Daimyo and the Shogun, they're supposed to have a full set of armor in case they're called to war. So we had to come up with a system where they're locked away in the samurai's apartment, and then only if they're authorized does it unlock.
Okay.
So samurai could be sitting there, you know, meditating or doing flower arranging, and all of a sudden their armor lock opens up, and they know that something bad's about to happen. They need to suit up and go out in the streets and deal with it.
Yeah, otherwise they'd just be putting it on all the time and overpowering everything.
So, and then in Paris wanted them to have, like, laser swords, like, you know, laser katanas.
Yeah.
So we designed technology for that, but we didn't want to groom everyone had laser guns. Like, I didn't want a Star Wars rip-off thing.
Yeah.
So we literally banned laser weapons and energy weapons on Earth.
Okay.
And samurai are allowed to use they're called Kozen blades.
Okay.
Which are just light blades and translated from Japanese. So players get one of those, but most of them, they're honor bound to use a lesser weapon versus lesser people.
Okay.
And so the gameplay is very strict to the rules of what the culture, you know, demands and what their status demands. So you wouldn't go overkill on a vassal that's like robbing a kiosk.
Yeah.
You'd either shoot him or you'd take, like, they're called high frequency blades, and then you just hit them with one of those.
Okay.
And chop their arm off or chop their heads off. And in that case, the samurai take your head.
So when someone's coming and they want to play this, right, what is character development like for them?
Character development's pretty straightforward. We actually included like a whole step by step in the book. So you kind of think about what you want to play. You pick your profession.
Pretend that I'm making the character, please.
And this is where Jonathan is like, hey, I want to make a character, and then I didn't put my glasses on.
Right, as you said, hey, I brought my glasses because I had to look at him and go.
I know, right? So the book. That's where you speed ahead.
It's a beautiful looking book, by the way, I didn't say.
This book is freaking nuts. But it's now like, hopefully, I haven't opened this book in a while. Oh, there we go. That's why I wasn't seeing it. You know, when you put a book together and you start working on the next book and you realize, yeah, I am really just like, okay. So on page 36 of the book, we have a character generation map.
Cool.
So the first one is you pick your Shokugi, which is the perfected.
Okay.
Aren't there any bastardizations I did of the pronunciations? So first thing is you pick a profession. What do you want to do in the game? Let's like, what's your goal? Do you want to be a gunslinger? And the gunslingers are actually bound to the same rules as samurai, but they use guns instead.
Okay.
You want to be like a Shinto priest, a Shinto wizard? Do you want to be a hacker? Do you want to be a corporate mercenary?
Okay.
Do you want to be a scavenger? I mean, there's a variety of things. It really boils down to is whatever the game master wants to run for a game is kind of what you need to focus the character on. Mm-hmm. And we have hackers as well. And we have something called the Nexorcist, which is it's a Shinto priest that can exercise demon spirits from cybernetics.
Oh, that's cool.
So in Cyberpunk, they have the cyber psychos. In Katana Raw, we have the techno possessed. And it's pretty much demons and spirits will possess your cybernetics because cybernetics can't resist being possessed. And then they possess the person via their cybernetics. So imagine having like a neural link and going down to like lower Togu where a lot of the weird stuff happens. And all of a sudden, your neural implant gets possessed, and now you're possessed by a demon.
Yeah.
And you have no more control over your body. So
that's funny.
So step one is you pick your profession. Step two is you determine base stats and substats. So there are only three stats in the game, and then within those stats, there are three substats.
Okay. So there are the three stats. Are we talking like charisma, strength, intelligence? For someone from a D&D kind of sphere, or what would the equivalent be?
All right, we have Pikaku, which is the physique. Okay. Again, pardon my pronunciations. I did not practice these before I came down. So that's like your physical piece. Now, substats that go with it are like your agility, constitution, and strength. And then you can have cybernetics, which can then enhance like one of these substats.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is Kuroku, which is intelligence.
Okay.
And those have substats of brains, sense, and wisdom. And then Saishin, which is spirit, with substats of magic, mind, and spirit, which is the spiritual power of the character. So what the stats do is they kind of give you a base that you need to roll under. for certain things, for like saving throws.
Okay.
Versus when you're doing an action, you use substats that are added to your rolls.
So when you're playing, you want the base stats to be a higher number, right? Because you want to get lower than that.
Yep.
Or the
substats are literally just to be added to your rolls.
So it's just like it's just a positive modifier.
Yeah. The substats can't
or negative, I suppose.
Yeah, the substats can't exceed the base stat.
Okay, so if your base stat of intelligence is 10, for example.
Which it wouldn't be, because the scale is like, I think it's like 1 to 5 for humans, and then you start going into other stuff.
So if it's a 5,
yeah,
and no matter what your other substats are,
you're not exceeding
5 above that. Okay.
Because people like the power game are going, yeah, I'm going to take 1 in my physique, but then I'm going to like,
yeah,
5 in my strength. It's like, you can't do that.
Yeah, how then you max it?
Because literally, you hit something and your body would break.
Okay. Yeah. So you get your stats after you got your profession. Yep.
Then you get your skills. So there's a whole skill list. And then the specialty skills that come with your professions as well. So you write all those down. Those all start at 2.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you can advance them accordingly. Skills in a game actually advance by how you play your character.
Oh, so okay.
If you roll really, really bad on your results table, your skill drops by 1. And it cannot go lower than 1. And it can't go higher than 4. And if you roll high, you roll like a... So zero, like if you roll a 1, then your skill goes down by 1. And if you roll a 10, your skill go up by 1.
So it's not a case of you playing a character and you reach level 5 or whatever, and then all your skills bump up already.
Yeah, it's all by your how you're rolling.
Okay.
The reality, too, is in some basketball, like, why would you do it like that? Because if you pay attention to the samurai films, when a samurai fails at something, they fail in a fight, they are doubting themselves, and they work hard to get themselves. They practically start back at like what would be equivalent of level 1. Mm-hmm. They have to work and try to work themselves back up again and feel strong again.
Yeah.
And so it's that role of 1 in losing that skill level is because it's the doubt in the character. So you're actually playing the character, not just relying strictly on, oh, the number does this. It's your character screwed up, and now you're going to focus on trying to get your character back up to speed. And between game sessions, you can train.
Oh, okay.
Which can actually increase those numbers again anyways. So even if you completely butcher your session that you're playing, you can take time between sessions and say, I'm going to train vigorously and I want this to be back up.
That's cool.
So it's just basically, it's a nice way to make the game fluid and stay authentic to the actual, like, the pride of the samurai, like, you know, their personal desire to be what they are. And it works great with everybody. Think about it. If you fail at something, you second guess yourself after that for a while.
Well, I'm not a good example for this, but
you're a terrible example.
I second guess myself at everything.
I mean, if you're second guessing yourself, it's going to cause you to make mistakes.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what the game exemplifies. Then we have health, which is the Kenko.
Okay.
And then you have the Kokoro, which is your heart, mind, and spirit as one. So this is like your spiritual self. So in Cyberpunk, they have humanity, and we have Kokoro, which, you know, says, like, if you're doing too much cybernetics or too much bionetics, when you start losing yourself, or you're using far too much, you know, spiritual magic. They don't even have magic in Japanese culture. It's funny. It's like, the research, like, it's not magic, it's spiritualism. So if you're letting yourself get possessed too much, you start losing the ability to be, like, control yourself. We have Hayabon, which is the reputation. So every character has reputation that's important. The worse your reputation, the more likely the hospital is going to stab you in the back on the street.
Makes sense.
The higher the reputation, which may not be good, means people either be fearful of you or at least know who you are and know like what you're capable of. We have Pomi, which is your wealth. So in Tara, we use yen coin,
okay,
or the currency. And then we have determine the way of, which is basically like equivalent of your alignment. So you choose the path of something. So samurai always follow the path of the Bushido. And actually, we have something. It's a very different name in here, which is why I stumped for a second.
So not a case of like you're trying to be lawful good or chaotic neutral.
Yeah, you actually follow an authentic Japanese like cultural path.
I love that.
And because it's supposed to be fuel Japanese cyberpunk,
yep.
We really, I mean, it's tight. I mean, everything in here is locked down into it. Then after that, you grab your gear, which usually on the professions come with gear anyways. Then you wrap up your loose end. It's called with things like your boy, which is the, if I even pronounce that right, it's your like an armor class. So it's like you're taking your physical stat, your whatever armor you have, and then you add that together, and that's the number that your attacker must roll over to hit you.
Okay.
And then fleshing out the character. So we have a.
It says in here there's actually a history
generator. Uh-huh. It's not actually in the book because it didn't make it in because we had to cut it. So it's in the world book.
Oh, that's a problem.
No, I mean, it's fine. I mean, this was what it is. It'll be the next book. But the history generator, all it is your life path anyways. So the core book gives you everything you need, and there's enough in there to really explain what the world is like.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as big of a deal, but it was one of those things where, like, I think I put it together at 0 hours, but like, oh, yeah, I want this. And then I forgot that I already set off the final file, so I was like, oh, I wrote my next book, and then I realized, I'm like, hey, where's this? History's when I really go, I'm like, oh, you know, it's a good question.
Yeah, wait a second.
I go through the book, I'm like, I look at the cutting room floor file, and it's in the cutting room floor file. I'm like, that's where it is, like, they're in the world book.
Yep.
So, and that's it. I mean, it's a 12-step program, just like if you want to quit drinking. And
okay.
But, yeah, and that's it. And then once you have all that done, you can start playing it. You know, 12 steps seems like a lot. But we did the demo characters for this. I think we did it in,
I want to say, like
15 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Because, I mean, with everything else pretty much included, all you got to do is make sure you get your stats, your defense stats right.
Mm-hmm.
And make your stats actually is what took a while. It took the longest.
Okay.
Because people are like, wait, is it, how does it work again? It's like, it works like this. So you kind of walk them through it. So then once they get the hang of it, they're like, oh, yeah, okay. So it feels like Star Wars D6. It's like, yeah, it's like it has that numbers feel to it, but it's a little different for sure.
No, that's really interesting. I'm not aware of any other role playing game that takes quite this approach to it, but I like how it like walks you through it, leads you along a path, so you're not just like, here's some numbers, try to come up with something that makes sense to them. Yep. To add flat. This actually does storytelling as you're doing it.
Yeah, and close was just like, everything should be explained. Like, no one's ever played, like, no one's ever played an RPG before. Of course, I do all my other books for my company. I rarely ever do that, which is odd. I mean, you could be doing that.
Yep.
Because I really painstakingly went through, and I'm like, it's like, oh, you know, and it's funny, I'm going to trash on another game real quick. I bought the Terminator RPG. It was so poorly written.
Oh, no.
And I actually was putting screenshots up online of some of the paragraphs, so I'm like, yeah, so we didn't do that with Katana Rod. It's like, it takes away from it.
Yeah.
You can tell when I'm writing this game, getting tired of writing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it shows in the writing. So I really made sure that when I sat down to do this, I was not tired.
Yep.
And I immersed myself in Japanese culture. My poor wife got stuck watching so much stuff.
It's like, are we watching anything in English today? I'm like, it's like, no, we're watching this today. I'm going to watch this.
So, and she was happy because it wasn't all like gory stuff. And it was just like, I mean, yeah, we did Lone Wolf and Cub, and we did Yojimbo and stuff, but we also did Good Morning, which is about two little boys that go on a fasting strike because they want their mom to buy a
TV so they can watch sumo.
And it's a 1959 comedy, but it's really fricked up because it's like they're living in housing that was built by the U.S. government after the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Right, of course.
And then on top of that, the kids are eating pumice stone to get which, of course, if you've ever, there's a book called The Rape of Nanjing,
yes,
which is about what the Japanese did to the Chinese during the war. And it's like, and that's what the people were eating. And it's like, this is a dark film.
Yeah.
But I wanted the cultural aspect of, I wanted your players to have to play in the actual world, like a real Japanese culture. And we had a cultural advisor who was my formal department chair at the college, who's like an expert on Japanese culture. And she and I would meet a couple times a week. It's like, all right, I just need to make sure I understand this correctly.
Yep.
This is what it means, and this is what they're trying. It's like, absolutely. It's like, wow, you actually got this pretty good. I'm like, okay. And then she was giving me access to other academic sites I could use in Japan to pull more stuff. My brother was sending me stuff because he's stationed in Japan. And
very cool.
I had tons of access to like all the stuff you need. Mm-hmm. So if I felt like, I don't feel like I'm really in the Japanese world today, I'd go like do like a walk through the museum, a virtual walkthrough or something to kind of get myself in the feel. And I know there's a playlist I have all in Japanese. And
yeah, you can tell you really just immersed yourself in it. You were living this.
Oh, frick yeah. It was beautiful. Japanese culture, like the arts, the music, it's just, it completely enthralls me. And even in the cultural aspect, I mean, whether they had isolationism or not at different points in their history,
mm-hmm. it's like
everything they did like had a purpose and it was based upon their I don't want to call it pride, but like their honor and stuff.
Yep. And so you,
even though, yeah, every culture has horrible stuff, you kind of see why they did it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an interesting,
you know, project to work on because of that. So.
No, I would imagine so. I know with a lot of cyberpunk settings, corporations play a big role.
Yep.
So what kind of role do they play in Katana Ra? And how do they interact with the player characters? What's their methodologies?
So it's interesting because Katana Ra are factions. So we have factions, and then within those factions, they're attached to clans. The factions and clans, and they're all attached to corporations. So So basically, it's like the Yakuza who have, you know, their crime syndicates, but they also have legitimate businesses.
Yeah.
So what you have in Katana Ra is exactly that. You have clans that really aren't criminals. They have legitimate organizations, but they use that power. So corporations are sort of mentioned within the book, but they're not written about because there's 23 pages that just went into the world book of all corporations.
Okay.
So every corporation is mentioned in there. What it does is each corporation ties into different city districts throughout, like Shogu, which is like the city region of Katana Ra,
mm-hmm.
and ties into the clans and kind of like how they interact. So there's like an organization, there's a corporation called Iron Wall. They handle all the mercenary activity on the continents. And the reason why is they were finding that during their equivalent of like a corporate war, that all these military veterans were killing each other. And they're like, oh, wait a second, this isn't working. Because they all show up together and then they show up to like do a hit or whatever. It's like one of their best buddies. They're like, this is not working. So Iron Wall comes along. They basically organize all the mercenaries.
Okay.
So they do business based upon you're not allowed to act against someone else from Iron Wall.
Mm.
And if you do, you lose your contract.
Yeah.
And then you lose your benefits and stuff. So we have corporations like that. And then there's like, they're literally the clans and corporations. If the name of the corporation is the name of the clan, it's like, maybe a little bit more obvious than that.
But it's,
everybody's kind of working their own angle, and that's how the game, like the corporations play. Some stand out more than others, like the Asanaga, you know, clan, like really just, it's considered like the power clan of all the organizations and the clans. Then they have tons of, they run like news agencies, they run other things. They basically control the media. We have a shinobi clan that runs the entertainment aspect of Katana Ra.
Okay.
So they have pay-per-view death matches. They have baseball. They have sumo wrestling. They do concerts.
Plus it's to the death.
It's hilarious. then they have like brothels and stuff. I mean, they run the underworld too. So it's very interesting. Like everything's tied to something that the characters are going to like stumble into.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you want them to find stuff.
Yep. And then, I mean, this one of the clans is called the Hidden Samurai Clan. And I'm like, okay, Kosawa, how do you want me to do it? I'm thinking, how does he want me to do this? Kosawa, she let me do whatever I wanted.
Yep.
So I'm like, okay. And so I made a Hidden Samurai Clan like right out in the open. this is like right there. They literally run an entire district within Shogu.
And it's just,
the entire district is their fortress.
Funny.
So.
Oh, that's really funny. And a different way to handle corporations, too.
Yeah, I mean, they're all tied to the political and corporate aspect. Whereas, you know, it used to be corporations are the antithesis of politics. But in Katana Ra, they're very much one controls the other. And if you look at modern America today, it's like pretty close.
You touched on this a little bit, but how does the game's rules and mechanics handle morality and ethics? Because it's a dystopian world, right?
Yeah. The way is actually how it handles that. So, like, even though that technically, samurais can run around and take the heads of vassals, because if you live in Japan, that's what they could do.
Yep.
There is a rule of, you gotta be doing something wrong. You think of it, like, it's like, remember Time Bandits, Robin Hood, where he beat the crap out of all the peasants? You can't do that. It's like, no, you can't just take his head because he's a peasant.
Yep.
It's like, you want to like have reasons. So, I mean, we broke the hierarchy in the actual game. So, like, you have the Emperor who's the, you know, the Emperor of Katana Rama, the whole continent empire thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have the Kugi who control the regions. But then underneath them, you have shoguns that are like the mayor of the city.
Okay.
The daimyos are the people who run the districts within the city. Mm-hmm. And then the samurai are in charge of individual blocks. So you kind of get assigned to, like, if you're a samurai player, you're going to get assigned to a block.
Okay.
And that's where you're in charge of making sure the police are doing their job. You make sure that if something really bad happens, you stop it. And then when the call comes to go to war, you put your armor on and you go wherever in the game world they require you to go to go fight. So,
really, because of the set in feudal Japanese kind of aesthetic, you just kind of were able to take that and then use that as play morality.
Yes.
And you have to adhere to it. So even though it's dystopian, there's
I mean, we have they're called street rats who literally can be cannibals.
Oh, okay.
It's because they avenge, that's all they do, but they're locally is like in like lower Shogu, middle Shogu, you know, where they're just causing havoc, where in upper Shogu they'd be executed on the spot.
Okay, okay.
And then there's other regions, other island regions where there's lawlessness. So you can be a gunslinger and still kind of be a bandit type character, or you can be a corporate mercenary and go murder people and stuff. There's nothing stopping you from doing it, but if you're playing a samurai, clearly you're not just going to go massacre people for laughs. If you're playing a shinobi, you're not going to like kill lots of people. You get paid to kill people. You want to make sure you're killing the right people.
Mm-hmm.
And doing it secretively, you know? And it's like,
yeah, you want to be fine.
You don't want to be like in the middle of the streets, like shooting everybody, going, yeah, this is, you know, that's not how you play. Each of the perfections kind of give you a guide as to what you're gonna be doing and what you shouldn't be doing.
Okay. You talk about a lot of combat kind of related stuff. How does combat work, or hacking, or any sort of action
combat-based
thing?
The dice roll is simple. It's like you roll two dice,
okay,
of different colors. One die, you designate each one for. So one's for an action roll.
Question: does it matter what color they are?
No.
Okay. So really, any colors you have at all?
I personally, I actually was talking to a vendor today or yesterday. I was like, "Do you make the yin yang dice?"
Oh, okay.
One would, you know, that it'd be on the dice. But so you roll one die is your action die, and that's the one you add like your skill to and your substat to.
Okay.
At least your relevant substat to. So you summon if you hit or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The other die you roll is a result die. We talked about this earlier about how the skills flow.
Yeah.
The result die tells you how much damage you've done. It's not like I rolled D10, I went through 10, like you roll a 5, you do 5 damage. There's a table and the weapons do so much, certain types of damage.
Okay.
So it may tell you do half damage or quarter damage or full damage. Mm-hmm. Well, in some cases, it's an automatic kill.
Well,
the game is very lethal, but there's ways to come back from that. And so there are other rules that samurai can. You can use all your actions to attack a group of people,
mm-hmm.
but you only roll one die.
Oh, and applies to everyone?
Yep, and applies. So whoever you roll above the hit, you put all those people. And then you roll one result die, and that's the result you get for hitting all those people.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes combat, especially for samurai, if you watch any of the samurai films, dudes are like going through crowds of people. And I played role-playing games before. It's just like there's no good, smooth combat mechanic for that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, why not just roll one die? Now, some people are like, well, I want the variety, and it's not fair if you roll bad. It's like, if you roll bad, then you deserve to roll bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, as my game design students will tell you, you're playing a spot of spire, then spire when you're lying. It really gives the effect, too, because if you watch Samurai Films, there are times where they go through a crowd of people, and they miss every one of them.
Yeah, they do.
And so it's like, that's okay. That's what makes the game cool. And so guns have their own number of actions.
Oh.
So if, say you have one action left and you have a gun that has two actions, you roll twice.
Oh.
Because the gun has two actions for one action.
Oh.
And so you can it allows you to empty your clip out. So there's passive actions, there's passive and active. And so they work differently. Like passive is if you're attacking somebody, then you just have to roll like under a certain your main stat or whatever. Versus active is where you use your substat to do stuff. And saving throws kind of work the same way. Where you roll under
would this be the same if you're trying to do say some sort of diplomacy or interrogating someone or whatever?
Yep. In that case, you'd roll you'd roll your, you'd be like your mind stat, but or the, you roll and then add your sub stat, the mind, and then, or not even mind, it would be for like intelligence or whatever, if you're interrogating somebody, and then if you have a skill for it, and then the other person make the resistance roll, their saving throw, and that have to be under whatever you rolled.
So if I'm understanding it correctly, it's the same mechanic that just kind of gets used throughout.
Yep.
At the risk of sounding really stupid, that just seems so, like, it just makes sense. It's so logical.
Yeah.
Why don't more systems use that?
You know, when I, with my game design classes, we talk about that. It's like, it is overly complex. We had Avengers United, I think, like Cool Minis or not.
Okay.
And I put that on the table, and my students, I said, okay, dissect the game, tell me what's wrong with it. And they found tons of things that just they didn't like about it. It's like, well, it's really complex. I'm like, yep, Joe and Zombie Side, same thing. It's 45 minutes to set up. It's a long time.
No, it is.
It's not a hard game, but it takes a while.
It's fun, yeah.
And the students are like, well, we love D&D 5th edition. I'm like, here, let me show you D&D 1st edition, 2nd edition, advanced D&D. I mean, last week we did iterations, and I brought in, like, the whole history of Dungeons & Dragons and put it on the table and said, okay, look at the books. Mm-hmm. They're all reprints, so I didn't. Get it open up and look at them.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And then I threw and looked at them, like, wow, there's far less in these other books. I'm like, yeah. And so I was like, the mechanics are easier in these older books, too. I'm like, yeah. Why is D&D 5th edition so complicated? It's like, because the people in the industry that are making the games, and no ill will towards any of them, but these are the number crunchers that when I came into the industry were creating like ridiculous games with crazy amount of rules. That's their thing. That's what they like. Their fans enjoy that. Me, I was designing games directed towards more of my daughters than I was anybody else. So when I went to work on this, I'm like, okay, well, what's wrong with Cyberpunk 2020? What's wrong with Cyberpunk Red?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, easy. And I fixed the hacking rules for Cyberpunk 2020, so it, you know, we didn't have those mistakes in here. And then I was like, okay, I need to, does people complain about this for Red? So we're not going to have that in there. It's like, I'm going to take what they talked about and make sure we have something what they were asking for. It's like, and we'll put that in there. So it's really, there's just people that like punchy games.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not one of them. We know people that love punchy games.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not my thing.
And I mean, that's okay. If you love it, do it. But I'm like, for me, gaming is an excuse to spend time with people I like.
Yeah. And if you're spending half the time doing rules, then you kind of lose the point of, like, I mean, granted, now when we play Star Wars D6 at my house, and we have like my best friend, and when his son used to come over and play and stuff, and we give the son the Ewok. I mean, yes, I did create what was Ewok up to table. It didn't exist in the actual D6 game, but I created a table for it.
Yeah,
Ewok table thing.
Yep.
So if you look, if you only could speak in Ewok. So we only could say his name. So his name was Chub Chub. So we like, because my we used to call him my nephew, like one of my nephews. He's like we didn't want him to get annoying, so that's how we kept him in check. And so he's like Chub Chub, and it's just like, oh, Chub Chub, what do you want to do? Chub Chub, really? Okay. And so you hold this table. Like, what's Chub Chub up to? It's like if we were around the table, and it's like because we were using my old. Bench,
yep.
As a gaming room, and you go around the room and be like, oh, Chub Chub up too. It's like, it's like, hey, the fridge came out of hyperspace. What? Where did you walk? It's like, and it goes on the table, it says, stream the hyperspace conduit power cord. So, yeah, I mean,
that's funny.
All right, it's new to you.
So, how do you balance player agency in this game with the structure for storytelling and just trying to convey and all that, but also combine the two?
Say that again, the first part.
Player agency. So, like, let's say I'm playing and I want to do something completely that was not
my theme. Okay.
Yeah. But you have this story that's trying to be told and that the players are supposed to be engaged with.
Yeah, this is one of the easy. It's like, if you're a samurai and you decide to disobey the daimyo or disobey the shogun, we're just going to take your head.
Okay.
And continue the game on. Like, literally, that's all you ended up doing.
So, there's not like any special rules or other mechanics, and there's just
no. It's game master's discretion. You're going to go off the beaten track. Especially if you are bound by certain things, you're dead. I mean, you're going to get killed. But the other thing is, and we didn't talk about this in Katana Law, if you die, you don't have to be dead. So because there's so many, there's like things to different you know, dimensions or whatever that are, well, basically trying the under, you know, Japanese hell. In Lower Shogu, there is the bridge to the underworld.
Oh.
Where it's constantly in flux.
Mm-hmm.
So if a player dies, say your entire party dies, your next game you run, or that game, that session that they'll die in the beginning, they all appear in Lower Shogu, naked. And if they can make their way back through middle, back to Upper Shogu and reach sunlight without eating anything, then they are resurrected.
Oh, that's interesting.
If they eat anything, if they drink water, consume anything natural to Lower Shogu, if they hit sunlight, they automatically look like they did when they died, and they have to be driven back to the underworld.
Oh.
Which is the story of the 3 days of life, where the wife eats food in the underworld, and she comes back up, and she hits sunlight, and she looks like she did when she died.
Mm.
That's one of the ways that the characters don't have to stay dead. Plus, we have cloning.
Mm-hmm.
So you can be, you basically, if you want to mix in, you could download your memory onto a backup.
Hmm.
If you go get killed, then it just, they'll take the backup and apply it to a clone. Which has an altered carbon type feel to it. You're not carrying a disc on you. It's, you just download it before you leave.
Okay, okay.
So kind of like this, like the sixth day.
Yeah. No, that's really interesting.
So death in the game, I mean, you can just kill players. I don't care. I mean, you do whatever you like. I mean, personally, I love massacring players. If they're playing really bad and they're interrupting your game or whatever. But yeah, the idea of keep players in line is to remind them that if they're honor bound, they better keep up with it. And if they're like a wizard or whatever, they're bound by the yin-yang philosophy. If all your power is based in darkness and you try to start using light power, then you're likely to get eaten by something. And even in the game, if you're using like magic or whatever, any type of ability like that,
yeah,
you have to roll on the, if you roll a one, you have to roll on the chaos table, which is some evil spirit comes and rips a soul from your body
and then it eats you.
So or you like partially transform into like, you know, maybe a hard bunny rabbit or something. think of the wizard from Crawl, that the trainee who always steps screwing up his spells. That's kind of like what you're looking at for the ill effects of spiritual magic in Katana Ra. So
it is very dark. You have to be prepared for that, I think, if you're going to play this.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Cyberpunk is not supposed to be like 80. So I like to refer to it in a very, it sounds so derogatory, like mittenpunk. So what you have today is a lot of mittenpunk because obviously society's changed and what people get angry about or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Real cyberpunk, it's all about giving a finger to the people and to the man. Giving the finger to the man and basically fighting against the system.
Mm-hmm.
So in real cyberpunk, everybody gets triggered. You'd be out there purposely trying to trigger them even more. Not trying to be like, I care about how you feel. You're like shooting them in the feet and sitting there and like, it's like taking a vegan and feeding them steak.
That wouldn't fly. But that's
like the Firehouse from PCU.
Okay. And actually, this is a nice segue. So I know Works Games is, they're very proud about diversity and equity and being inclusive. How does that impact what happens in the game here? And how is that handled, both in the game world, but also just the players in general?
I'll be honest with you. I mean, Kosala is way more diverse than I am.
Mm-hmm.
I literally just, the idea is if you want to play a diverse character in the game, play the diverse character in the game. So why do I have to tell you, here's your options to be diverse. If you're diverse, be diverse.
Mm-hmm.
But just play what you want to play. It's like when a game dictates that you should do something one way or the other, it's like that takes away from the fun of it. When we played Dungeons and Dragons back in the day, yes, we had a variety of characters. It didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if you're telling people you have to have this, then you're missing the whole point of it. Like, why are we doing this? So we're doing it because it's fun.
Yeah.
So I mean, if you want to play whatever, you play whatever you want.
So if you want to play a neurodiverse character or someone who's disabled in some way or whatever, you just go and do. Well, so actually, I didn't even think of this before, but I know in D&D was a big thing about allowing characters to have some sort of
wheelchair.
Yeah. So, and is there something
I'll tell you.
With the cybernetics, right? You don't really need.
Well, here's the thing. We include like bionetics because Because the reality is, if you really want cybernetics in this game, if you're going middle of Fogo, because you're going to get possessed. But we have Bionetics, which is basically bioengineered, like, arms, parts. Is there a need for wheelchairs in this game? No, there is not. Because literally, even a Shinto priest can cure your paralysis if you were paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how the Emperor keeps everybody in check. Why would you want your population to be sick or lame or whatever when you can just cure them?
Mm-hmm.
And so we make an emphasis, especially in the world book, in the medical section of the world book of corporations, they can cure everything.
Cool.
And so the only thing you have to worry about is alien diseases coming from other planets. You don't have to worry so much about, or the can go through pain, which is the possession of the evil energy that's coming out of hell.
Okay.
Which is the other thing that can kind of mess you up. So cybernetics kind of like, give me your quick cure, but bionetics works great. Or you just get cloned. Okay. Have some the genetics and the clone, so you don't have that disability anymore.
Hmm.
So we made people, we talk about this, and it's like, well, Cyberpunk, they have the battle rocker wheelchair thing. It's like, it's Cyberpunk. I mean, the MCU, with Rhodey, when he got paralyzed,
Even
like an exoskeleton, and there's exoskeletons in Cyberpunk.
Mm-hmm.
If you have an exoskeleton, it's like, if you have exoskeletons, why do you need the wheelchair aspect? But again, to each their own. I mean, you want to have that, that's what you have.
Yeah,
you have to build one in this game, but we didn't take into account, and let's be real, feudal Japan, if you were crippled, they're just going to kill you anyways.
Yeah, they probably would.
So why are we, this is 100% authentic, which probably would upset people, but you know what? I didn't make it to Dictator. I made it to be authentic to what the publisher wanted.
Yeah, no, I mean, you had criteria that you were following,
yep.
But also you were trying to make it an immersive experience for it to be as close to that setting in that world.
Yeah, and Gasol is by far, she covers all the bases when it comes to that, to making sure that we are in line with whatever,
Yep.
So I honor that. I mean, I 100% respect, and we do what I'm told.
Yeah, so. Of course. So I know there's been some mixed reviews about the game.
Yes.
And I thought I'd give you a chance to maybe address those.
All right. So let's play the party game. So the first one that I saw that actually upset me, or actually the really upset me, was someone got a Pop Hero Neat copy, and the book screwed up.
Yeah, from Germany.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I saw that the actual copies that are carried at the bookstores,
mm-hmm.
it was Squash or Games happening in Havlan, the book is beautiful.
Mm.
And I've got a POD copy here,
yeah.
And it doesn't look like this.
Okay.
I mean, it's got a gloss cover, gloss pages. I was like, I still jerked, man. It's like,
I don't think this looks bad. I have to say, I don't think it looks off
the
thing.
Yeah, and so the actual book itself, it's a good book. It's fantastic. So you can actually, I gave you a thing you can show on your page and stuff.
Yep.
Where you can order from actual flat, your brick and mortar stores.
Okay.
From even Factor Venus didn't even know I wrote the book. The guy's so happy to have Katana Rod. He's like, oh yeah, and you're digging a fight. He pulls it out. I'm like, oh, do you want a copy of this? I'm like, this came in. We packed it. It was brand new. I'm like, yeah, this is my book, guys. They're like, wait, why? I'm like, this is the one I did for work stores. Like, no, great. When I opened it up and threw it in, I'm like, wait, what the heck? It's like, that's like, yeah. He's like, this is the baby. To the person that's a really poorly printed book, I apologize. I just tell them posted on our Facebook page, contact me, we'll get you a fixed book. I will get it. I will personally take care of it. The other complaints we got, people didn't read the rules.
Okay.
Didn't actually read the rules. I mean, one person just cracked us on DriveThruRPG.
Yes, they didn't tell us.
I mean, until the point where it's like, did he even open the book? Because here's the thing, a lot of people are obsessed with D20.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. That's fine. They don't understand other game systems. So a lot of the complaints we're getting was people who'd never played another game system.
Okay.
Or they never played Cyberpunk.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have worse complaints.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, that's fine. It's like, I get it. You didn't read the book. But when people troll you, and it happens a lot. I mean, I've been in the industry this 2001.
Yep.
Man, they come out of the woodwork to troll you.
Mm-hmm.
When I did PR for Tell Story and for Mechtan Zero,
yep.
I deal with that every single day.
Yeah, you do.
So you know who's trolling and who actually like gives a crap about the product.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to make sure that the fans that give a crap about the product, you're taking care of. The ones that are complaining, and clearly you can go into the book and look at the chapter and like, it's right here.
Yeah.
Not read the book. Those are the ones You nod your head, you smile, and then you give him the old thumbs up, okay sign, and that's the end of it.
No, you're right. Just one of the reasons, Toga, when you were talking about, I'm just going to read a blurb from it. It says, amazing setting, broken system. System is such that your PC is going to have volatile stats as failures with reduced stats, and you need to roll two successes concurrently to pass a skill check. This system will make your players unhappy. And I think that's exactly what you're just talking about.
Yeah, see, so, I mean, we talked about this.
Yeah.
Why don't you just roll two dice so you don't have to roll the result die if you succeed?
Yeah, so, yeah, it's,
you know, I mean, look, they had me doing PR for Mechtron Zero because I don't put up with people's crap.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, you know me for years. And so it's like, when I saw that, I looked at it, I was hard, I'm like, all right, so, finally this person didn't read it. Now they're trolling us. I'm like, I'll let you handle it because I'm probably not the person. I'm going to tell them to go F themselves. And like, you didn't read the book. It's like, don't waste my time.
What I find interesting, though, is even with their complaints, their trolling, there's something positive, say.
Yeah, the setting.
And so someone else was like, the art is amazing and the world building very interesting and evocative. And then they had something negative to say, which I'm not going to repeat. But like,
it's a little... Yeah, the setting rocks. I mean, and the setting is built into the mechanics.
Yeah.
If you took the mechanics out, the setting would suck.
Mm-hmm.
And if vice versa, you took the setting out, it would just be... The idea is, you know, we've been doing this for years. Like, Gerasaurus once said, he's like, the age of the RPG is dead. Like, our industry's dead. And he said that in front of Pondsmith, and it was like... But what he was saying, it wasn't like he was wrong.
Yeah.
But the methodology of how we go about playing tabletop games has changed.
It has.
So now we're moving more in the age of, you want more story to go with it.
Yeah.
And that's where the monologue goes. It's like, you really want to have the story aspect to your players.
Mm-hmm.
Like, today I'm going to run a demo, and it's going to be 2 hours. It's going to be like, it's going to be nothing but killing things.
Yeah.
Why do we do that? Because we wanted to show the people who were like, oh, this mechanic is broken.
And you can do it. Early
today, this works.
It's 2 hours. I mean, how much story building is telling can you do in 2 hours?
So, like, the demo tonight will be, like, we have adults only.
Yeah,
so,
I saw that.
They replaced my Cyberpunk adults only game from Cyberpunk with that. And there's a bunch of samurai escorting a Shinto priest to a highway entrance from Lower Shogu to put a blessing on it so the Oni can't keep coming up from the biker gangs can't keep coming up.
Nice.
And then they have to liquidate the only lord that happens to be up there.
Okay.
And so it's going to be interesting because nobody is equipped to handle that.
Mm.
So it's really going to be they're going to have to work together and figure it out versus just, you know.
No, that sounds really
whipping out like Kozen. And I think everything I gave him Kozen blades, I think I actually stepped in with high frequency swords to really make it funky.
Yeah.
So, but they have to meet with the Shogun first. They have to help for it. And then they have to go, you know, do their mission.
Yeah.
So you're going to get the whole cultural aspect. I'm going to make my fucking players like kneel before me while I do the beginning of the game. Just to have the full immersion. I won't do that, guys. Don't worry. Have that full immersion. But you really want the feel, and that's kind of where the problem lies. Is the book is very compact.
Mm-hmm.
The world book actually blows everything out. So you have setting like the write up in here and stuff for the cities and stuff. Those are edited, like, by whole paragraphs.
Oh, wow.
So the rule book will blow that back up. I mean, it's, yeah. So, guys, so those of you who have a problem with the game, like a legit issue or whatever, please reach out to me. I always work with fans. That's one thing I'm known for, and Jonathan can tell you.
Mm-hmm.
We always work with fans. If you're just going to complain, then, I don't know, have fun with that.
So, you've done a lot of things in the gaming world, and you always have something new coming out. Of course, Katana Rounds being the newest thing. For those who want to keep up to date with all the stuff that you're doing, what's the best way for them to do that?
Jay Parker on Facebook. Like, I have a page that I put up.
Yeah,
because I'm working with Flint Dilly, who just did Transformers and stuff. So I brought you the Sucked Aliens poster that...
I know that's what you're working on, too.
That's actually where I'm loading art. It's in layout. We're just going to move forward with it, because... He was trying to sell it to other publishers, and I can't talk about that aspect because there's some names in there that are pretty big, and so we're just going to move forward with it. So his son and I are working on getting things finalized, and that book's turning out beautiful. I mean, I actually have a PDF with me on my laptop, and if I catch up with you this weekend when I have my laptop, I'll show you.
Oh, nice.
And that thing is just sick. My wife's like, wow, okay, I've never seen anything like this from you before. I'm like, I know. Because it's Flint, and you have to do
step up.
Or you do better when it's the guy who did the big game to work for TSR.
Well, yeah.
We just launched a, it's called Witcher's Abbey. It's like a Downton Abbey themed card game.
So cool.
Where you each play, it's a two-player game. Each player gets a house.
Yeah.
And then you draw, you pick a butler, and then you start drawing from the deck. You get staff, and then if you get an event, if you have enough staff, you can run the event.
All right.
And you have reputation. And so each year, when the deck is done, you add up all your reputation. Whoever's got the highest reputation wins the year.
Ooh.
And then replayability is just go back into it the next year and keep playing.
I see. Okay.
But we got like Spanish flu in there. We got World War One.
So
pulling all your of age people that can be drafted
home
from the house, and then you draw who, like, you put them so you don't see who they are, and then you like take five cards from that pile.
Oh, okay.
And then from that pile, you take three.
Yep.
And those are three people that die in the war.
Okay.
So there's some pretty horrible stuff, but it's very authentic to the whole story arcs and stuff. So my wife and I did that. And I even brought this to show you. This was Clint was out showing this to the Blizzard people and some other people. I actually got an email about this from one of the guys, but we did these cards up.
Oh, cool. Subterranean cards.
Yeah, I was like, don't say like that. So I have one of my students is here. The high-level design document, we did one in card format, which is, you've seen the chapter. It's like crazy. We did an entire chapter done in cards just to like show off.
Which, of course, the downside of doing that is
when you do things like this, then you're like, everyone's like, what do we want more? And it's like, no. So I did a box set of cards that you could play. It's got like mapping cards. There's even a flint card in there.
Funny.
But we have like mapping cards, and we have other pieces too. So it looks really, really good.
No, that's awesome.
And it gets people teased. So.
Yes. And then I know that you have Dilly Green Bean Games, so people can check you out on that as well, right?
So you can catch us on Dilly Green Bean Games. You can catch us on Jay Parker. The Works Games stuff, you can catch on the Works Games Facebook page. And Subterraleans has their own. We have a Subterraleans Facebook page as well. So
cool.
I'm everywhere.
And, of course, everyone can catch us on all the things as Wargaming Recon. Jade, thank you for taking the time to be here today.
Thank you very much for having me.
A lot of fun. I want to thank everyone for taking the time to listen to this episode of the podcast. And you know the drill. No matter how busy you are, no matter what's going on in your life, you know you gotta. You have to. You need to. Keep on gaming.
Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon on your mobile device. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew.
Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. Lights, camera, action! Huzzah goes Hollywood May 17th to the 19th, 2024, at the Doubletree in Portland, Maine. Become a gladiator, defend the Little Round Top, explore dwarven mines, or command a mighty starship. Your fun is only limited by your imagination. Get tickets at huzzahcon.com.